Good morning. I'm producer Maureen Harvey, sitting in for Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Each meal requires us to make choices about what we eat and how much we eat. Our reasoning can be complicated. We've made choices about food or had them made for us since childhood. These decisions are often highly influenced by society's mixed messages about good and bad foods. Joining me to untangle these issues is Virginia Soul Smith, journalist and author of The Eating Instinct: Food Culture, Body Image, and Guilt in America. Her book comes out on November 13th, and she will be in Towson this Sunday at a free event hosted by the Center for Eating Disorders at Sheppard Pratt. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you open this book with a story about your daughter, Violet. She was born with a congenital heart condition that went undetected until she nearly died at 1 month old. Can you tell us about how this affected her ability to eat?
Yes. So, you know, in the first few weeks of Violet's life, I thought I was doing what new parents or, you know, what new moms do. We were working on breastfeeding. It was hard and time-consuming, but it sort of seemed to be working. And then when the eating sessions went from like 45 minutes to 20 minutes to 6 minutes, I thought, oh, we're getting better at it. It's getting more efficient. That was not the case. The day before Violet's one-month birthday, she went into heart failure. Thankfully, we were very lucky to be in an excellent children's hospital. They were able to save her life, and we began the journey of the series of heart operations. But the big side effect of those early weeks of her actually being quite sick and us not knowing it, and then all of the trauma that she underwent, necessary trauma, of course, to save her life, but things like being intubated and lots of medications and tubes and things coming at her all the time in the hospital, she stopped eating. She just wouldn't do it. She wouldn't latch on for breastfeeding. She wouldn't bottle feed. She would gag and scream and kind of turn her head away. And so she was dependent on a feeding tube for most of the first 2 years of her life.
And you and your husband worked very hard to make her feel safe and comfortable to try different foods. And you also sought guidance from speech pathologists and behavioral therapists. Can you tell us what advice they gave you?
Yeah, so it's really difficult. You know, thankfully, Violet's issue is pretty rare, but feeding issues among kids are not rare. Somewhere around 20 to 40% of children get diagnosed with some kind of pediatric feeding problem. So given how widespread these kinds of challenges are, it is frustrating that there's not more better help out there. And when it comes to feeding problems with babies and small children, most of the advice comes from behavioral therapists who use this method known as one-to-one reinforcement, where a child is basically trained to take a bite and get a reward. And every time they take their bite, they get the reward, which might be a sticker, it might be bubbles. Often it's screen time, like they'll get to watch a minute of our cartoon. And what this does is it does in the short term appear successful because it helps the kids push past a lot of the fear and they think, oh, I'm getting my cartoon. All right, Peppa Pig will keep playing. I'll keep eating. But it's really training them not to listen to their bodies. It's training them to overcome, you know, to push through this sort of barrier of whatever trauma and fear has caused them to stop eating without healing that trauma. So the method we ended up going with is known as child-led feeding. In that method, therapists work much more on trying to heal the trauma and problem solve and figure out how to make a child feel safer around food, how to bring back that connection to the sense of hunger and fullness that they once had that has been covered up by whatever else has gone wrong.
Was there a particular moment when Violet's eating habits seemed to really turn a corner?
Well, there was a couple really cool moments. One favorite story is when she was probably about a year and a half. I remember one afternoon I was eating an apple and she wanted a bite of my apple. And then she was just sitting on my lap, like kind of, you know, chewing, like she didn't have all her teeth, so more gumming on this apple, but, you know, and she was all snuggled up with me and she was happy eating the apple. And I thought, this is the first time in my baby's life I've held her and fed her, and it's been a comforting experience for her.
Tell us about Violet now. How old is she and what are her eating habits like?
She is 5 years old. She's in kindergarten, and she loves mac and cheese. She loves peanut butter and jelly, turkey sandwiches, Sometimes broccoli, you know, has a very five-year-old attitude towards broccoli, which I can respect. You know, there's just a huge range of foods that she's excited to eat and to try now. And what's really cool is that I often see her continuing to really check in with her body, and she does know when she's hungry and when she's full. And what's useful about that is now that she is a typical oral eater and we're out in the world, you know, encountering lots of foods that I think parents often get very anxious about, will their kids eat too much birthday cake or too much candy or too much of this, because we have so many messages about those foods being bad and unhealthy. I never worry about that with Violet because I know she's enjoying a wide variety of foods and doesn't sort of overly fixate on any one thing. And so she'll eat till she's full and get the pleasure out of it and then move on.
That's Virginia Soul Smith, author of The Eating Instinct, which examines the anxieties and aspirations that surround our relationship with food. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Maureen Harvey. One of the consequences of this ordeal was that you became very aware of how people spoke about eating in front of Violet. What messages do kids hear about food?
There are so many messages, and they start so early. One of the moments that really brought this home for me was when Violet was maybe about 14 months old, and she was sitting in her high chair, and a caregiver who was working with us was giving her some cheese. And she said, in a really joking offhand, like didn't even think about it way, she was trying to encourage Violet to eat the cheese. And she said, oh, Violet, you're so lucky you can eat cheese. I can't eat cheese. It makes me fat. And she didn't even hear it. You know, I heard it because I was sort of standing there, and I thought, oh, my gosh, like, why did you just tell a baby that cheese makes you fat? This is not really relevant to this child, and it's such a negative message to have about food. But this is how we all talk about food. We all are conditioned to feel like we have to apologize for our hunger or apologize for our food choices. And all of that is messages coming from our culture, coming from media and diet marketers and food marketers and all these different sources. And unfortunately, kids are exposed to them really, really early.
You write about one mom who runs a blog called Mealtime Hostage. Her son faces a lot of problems figuring out what foods he feels comfortable eating. How much pressure are parents under to be feeding their children the quote-unquote right foods?
It's ridiculous, to be honest with you. I think what's happened is as diet culture has intensified and the messages around the, quote, right way to eat or good foods and bad foods have intensified in our culture so that it's not, you know, when I was a kid in the 80s, there was a lot of emphasis on low fat or low calorie, but these days it's like clean eating and gluten-free and low carb and paleo, and like dieting is like off the charts. It's so complicated and it's so difficult. Nutrition feels like this permanently unsolvable Rubik's Cube to a lot of us. And unfortunately, while many of those messages are initially aimed at adults, it all trickles down to how we think kids should eat. So now we have this expectation that two-year-olds should like kale or all these foods that most two-year-olds don't like. And it's okay that they don't like. So they have their whole lives to like kale. It's fine. So there's this double pressure on parents, because especially on moms, because we're kind of ground zero for a lot of these messages, that we need to be eating perfectly ourselves and feeding our kids perfectly. But there's no such thing as perfect eating. There's just what you're doing meal to meal.
Your book, The Eating Instinct, includes chapters about the erasure of Black food culture, profiles of people who are obsessed with clean eating, stories of people who are recovering from weight loss surgery, and more. Do you think that society's messages about good and bad foods and good and bad bodies, do you think that there's any progress being made to chip away at that dichotomy?
I do think there's progress being made. I'm encouraged by things like the rise of body positivity movements on social media. I think that there's a lot of conversation happening about these issues. You know, I can tell you, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, as a journalist, when I was pitching stories on these topics to women's magazines, they were not nearly as receptive as they now are to talking about these topics and towards things like including more inclusive body sizes and advertising and media. I definitely see that shifting, and it's super exciting. At the same time, we're not all the way there. I think we're in kind of a messy middle stage where what's happening now is big brands are realizing there's a market for this kind of messaging, but that can lead to co-opting of the rhetoric where we're maybe being advertised the same old beauty products, the same old skinny jeans, but we're being told, no, no, we're embracing this wide range of body types as long as you can fit in these jeans. So there's kind of two steps forward, one step back sometimes. And I would say the area that I still see the biggest sort of room for progress is around how we as individuals talk to ourselves around food. I think we'll sort of, like, we're at a point where we know people come, health comes in a range of shapes and sizes. We know it's not right to discriminate against bigger bodies, but we don't always give ourselves the same permission. We don't let ourselves take up the space we need to take up in the world. And that's something that I think we can all work on. You know, one way I try to do it all the time is, A, I'm really aware now of how I talk around about food and bodies around my daughters. But I also just ask myself all the time, like, would I want my daughters to eat this way? Would I want them to feel this way about eating? And I think that's a helpful, you know, if you wouldn't put your kid on that diet, if you wouldn't put your best friend on that diet, like, why are you putting yourself on that diet?
And I imagine social media is one place where people are getting these messages over and over and over again about, you know, what is attractive and what is healthy.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important, because that's one thing that's changed a lot, is we now, you know, we've always been exposed to advertising. We've always been exposed to messages about the thin ideal and about nutrition and these sorts of things. But because of social media, it's more constant than it ever was before. And it's like on this little device that's on our bodies at all times, because we're also plugged into our phones. So I do think a really important thing to do is to look at your feeds on Instagram or Facebook or, you know, wherever you're following people. And if there's someone in your feed that makes you feel bad about your body, unfollow them. Like, you don't need that message by any means. If there's somebody doing a diet that, you know, people love to post about their diets or post about this kind of weight loss goal or that, you can clear all that out, and I promise you won't miss it. I absolutely do not. When I did unfollow a lot of stuff, it's really liberating.
How has your relationship with food changed after watching your daughter recover and then writing this book?
I mean, I think we're all a work in progress. And, you know, I, while writing this book, was also, well, I was recently pregnant with Violet, you know, had her, and then became pregnant with my second daughter when I was in the throes of writing this book. So I've had two babies and all of the changes in your relationship with food and body that come along with that. But, you know, I do think both what we went through with Violet and just having daughters in general has really crystallized my goals here. And I do, like I said, I do try very much not to shame my body, shame other people's bodies. I really try to steer conversations away from fat talk and negativity and apologizing for food with my friends, and certainly if my kids are in earshot. And I think I'm much more at peace with my own hunger, because I know now, you know, that the most important thing is listening to those instincts. Like, when I'm hungry, I eat. I don't beat myself up over, oh my God, it's 10 a.m. Why am I hungry for lunch already? Well, I ate breakfast at 6 a.m. Like, this is time passing. This happens. And I don't stress out about, I mean, I enjoy cooking. I enjoy eating a wide range of foods, but I don't feel like I'm being graded by every meal. I focus much more on pleasure and contentment for myself and my family.
Thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Journalist and author Virginia Soule Smith's book, out November 13th, is titled The Eating Instinct. She'll be in Towson this Sunday to speak at a free event hosted by the Center for Eating Disorders at Shepherd Pratt, and we have a link to registration information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm producer Maureen Harvey here on The Record on WYPR. A quick break now, and when we're back, a Stoop story.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.